Good afternoon, Sister Rita. It's so nice to have you here with us this afternoon. I've been looking forward to this interview for very many reasons, some of which I sure you know. We share so many pleasant memories together. And so we can start at the beginning of your very interesting history.
Good afternoon, Sister Ann. And who would ever dream that one day we'd be sitting at the mouth recording the history.
That's right. Stranger things have happened.
Of my life. So I begin with February 19th, 1918. A second set of twins, Ida and Rita, arrived at the Hennessy family in Swampscott. And waiting there to welcome us were three brothers and a sister. And it was in this home, filled with faith, caring, and love, under the guidance of a devoted mother and dad, that the love of God was implanted in us. And it was here, too, that both of us, Eileen and I, received the seed of vocation was planted for both of us. My early education was entrusted to the Sisters of St. Joseph, and during the formative years, it was the sisters at St. John's in Swampscott who nurtured this faith and prepared me for the sacraments.
Do you recall anyone in particular among that very fine faculty? I know they were all influential, but I'm certain some stood out among others.
I guess Sister Mariona, I could say, who was my ninth grade teacher at St. John's, is the one that I remember in particular at that time.
Mm-hmm. Knowing Sister Mariona, I'm sure she did make an impression on her students. Mm-hmm. And then you left St.
From
John's.
There, I went on to my high school education at the Mount in Brighton. And I continue to see in my sisters a living example of dedication, compassion, and genuine concern for all the children under their care. And in particular, it was Sister Isolita, Sister Tassisius, and Sister Pascalita, who became role models for me at this time. And it was here at the Mount, in my Holy Week retreat, that the seed of vocation planted so many years before came to fruition. And on February 2nd, 1936, the day finally arrived when I found myself saying goodbye to my family and friends.
And in the meantime, of course, Eileen too came to the Mount.
That's right. Mm-hmm. She came a year after I did.
That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you enjoyed high school days here together.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely difficult for me to part with my family, but particularly for my twin. And little did I realize that she would follow me in a year and a half. For me, my vocation was a loving call to follow Christ as revealed in the gospel and to lead a life of service to others through the corporal and spiritual works of mercy. The years of postulancy and novitiate passed by quickly, with happy days, sad days, and lonely days, as our mistresses endeavored to make and to mold us into perfect Sisters of St. Joseph.
And I was going to ask you, who were your mistresses at that time?
Sister Wilfred and Sister Teresa Manton.
Sister Winifred was not there
no,
at that time?
She had just gone.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those were the two. And Sister Maria was there in education.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And during these days of training, the one thing that I could not reconcile was the loving, gentle God I had always known with the demanding God presented to me here.
In what way?
Well, I'll give you an example of that. We had visiting day during my days of postulancy and novitiate every 3 months. And as the visiting day approached, Eileen came with mother and dad and anybody else who would come. But as soon as she got inside the front door, she was whipped off to punch have the whist parties that went on simultaneously with your visit with your family.
I recall that. So you didn't have a visit with Eileen
so
at all.
So I really saw Eileen. So I got word at one of the visiting days that the mother told me that Eileen was going to enter. It was she that told me. And so I went to my mistress and asked her if I could have permission to have a visit with Eileen. And so, because she was going to enter. And so permission was given for Eileen to come to Framingham.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
So they drove up from Swampscott. Mother and Dad drove her. And she came in, and I was given a half hour to visit with Eileen. And my mother and Dad were told to stay in the car. They would not be allowed to come in. That had quite an impact on me. I just couldn't, I didn't feel that that's the way Jesus would have acted had he been there.
You're right. Mm-hmm. And even with all of that, Eileen was not deterred.
No, not a bit.
Yeah. She perhaps didn't feel it as much as you did.
No. Mm. Probably.
At that time.
At that time.
Right.
Right.
Mm. So when did Eileen enter then?
She entered that following fall. That was in, I left the leadership then in August, and she came in September.
I see.
Yeah, in September. So I really was never there with her.
And where did you go for your first assignment?
My first assignment was at St. Mary's in Brooklyn. And in my reading just recently, when I was thinking about this
interview,
I read in Henry Nouwen's Life Science that community is a place where God completes and lives with us his joy. And that made me start to think about the missions that I had had in my life during my 53 years of religious life. And I thought that with these joys came sorrows and heartbreak.
And disappointments.
And disappointments. And yet at the same time, there was always that resurrection. So for 44 years of these years, 44 years of it, 53 years, I spent in education, where there were those years in the classroom with my fifth and sixth graders, and then a little later with my junior high students.
Where did you have junior high, Rita?
I had junior high in, I had junior high in West Roxbury, in Weymouth. That's where I had my seventh and eighth grade students.
Did you enjoy your seventh and eighth grade students?
Very much. It was challenging, mm-hmm. and yet it was rewarding.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm sure, this that prepared me for my assignment to St. Joseph's as superior and principal.
St. Joseph's in Lynn.
In Lynn, right. Mm-hmm. And so here at St. Joseph's, the Lord provided me with a beautiful community that truly enhanced my life with joy. But the Paschal Mystery, the rhythm of the Paschal Mystery, is ever present. There was the tragic accident of the four sisters.
Yes, I well remember it.
Who were seriously injured.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister Adela died as a result of that accident several months later. And Sister Licinius, Sister Emon, and Sister Lorenza had long periods of convalescence. And then there was Sister Columbhill, who was taken from us.
Oh, that's right.
Very suddenly in the prime of her life. And we had the big church fire. And it was only the dedication of the wonderful firemen of Lynn that saved our church from complete destruction.
Is that right? What year was that, do you recall?
1967.
Oh, it was after I had left there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so through all these hardships, God used his CSJ community, my parishioners, and my dear friends, as the instrument of support and love.
I can remember, you're speaking of the wonderful parishioners, that at the time of the accident, I was living with you at St. Joseph's, and neighbors called in and said they would cover classes, they would do anything, they were sending in food as if because there was an accident the rest of us weren't able to do anything. And I was very impressed with those parishioners.
So they're unusual people in St. Joseph's. Yeah.
And so after St. Joseph's, Lynn?
Well, I wanted to tell you that it was there at St. Joseph's in the late 60s when we were allowed to get involved with civic things that Sister Marie Lawrence and myself joined the Model Cities organization. And as a member of the Education Board, another, Education Committee, another lay principal and I were able to draw up a curricula for the kindergartens that were being proposed for the city at that time. And I can remember going to Sister Jean Ibeck up in Haverhill to her beautiful setup up there.
Oh, yes.
And it was just unbelievable the help that she gave at that time.
Rita, after your wonderful experiences in Lynn, what was next in your young life?
In the 1970s, I was asked to take a principalship at St. Charles in Waltham. And this was to be the first house with experimental living, where, along with the four sisters who taught at St. Charles, there were four other sisters who were living with us in community, but who went out each day to their apostolate. And we also had two sisters living with us who were studying at Regis at the time.
Was this the new convent at St. Charles?
No, the sisters had been there several years in the new convent. Sister Anna had been the principal before I went there.
I see.
And they had been in the convent for some time, but it was a very beautiful convent. It was one of the buildings that the pastor, Father Desmond, had put up there. Improved the situation at Waltham quite
a bit. I'm sure it did.
So, for the first time here at Waltham, after 34 years in religion, I learned to contribute to community by taking a turn as a cook. Each one of us had to prepare a main meal, and we made a solemn promise not to complain, just eat. And you know, it worked. There were negative feelings when I received my call to go to Jackson and Newford as principal.
How many years after your experiment in Waltham?
2 years in Waltham. And at that point, they were closing the school. And the Sister A. Catherine Murphy and Sister Trace Higgins arrived to tell me that they felt they had been over to the pastor and that they felt that St. Charles no longer warranted a full-time principal. They were gradually going to close out the school. He had already closed a first grade before I got there.
So actually it was the pastor that was withdrawing the education.
Withdrawing the education,
and
yes,
not the Sisters of
absolutely.
St. Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important point.
Well, I might tell you then here that when I arrived at
St. Charles,
the truant officer came maybe the 1st of January asking for information that I had already given in October. And from my past experience as principal, I knew that there was something wrong. So I immediately called Sister Anna to ask her what she thought was going on, knowing that she knew nothing about the first grade closing
the year before,
the year that she left.
I see.
And so she told me to get in touch with the superintendent, a great gentleman, a Mr. Fitzgerald in Waltham, which I did. And the outcome of that whole thing was that he was able to share with me the fact that the pastor was at the school committee meeting talking about absorbing his children into the system of Waltham. So then we immediately went to Father John Bowles, and the oil of his anointing as the liaison between himself and the cardinal wasn't dry. We were the first real assignment that he had, and as a result of that, by my second year there, the second grade had closed out. So it was at that time that sisters came and said they felt that it no longer warranted
a full-time
principal.
Right.
So Sister Florinda was made part-time principal, and she was teaching fourth grade. And they asked me at that time to take Jackson's.
Getting back to Father Bowles, he was assigned as superintendent of the Catholic schools.
Yes, yeah.
That was his...
Not superintendent, no. His was a particular job in the archdiocese. He was a liaison between the schools and the cardinal.
In this time,
maybe
of
a troubleshooter or
I
something
see.
Of that nature.
I see.
Because we had our superintendent.
Who was the superintendent of that time? Well,
Gene Sullivan. I ever forget.
Surely.
Yes, Eugene Sullivan.
Oh, but Father Bowles had a.
He had a special. This was a very particular assignment.
I see.
Cardinal Medeiros inaugurated.
I see. You know. Oh, very interesting.
And he was very helpful to us. He came. Mm-hmm. He interviewed every sister. And we explained to him that we had the feeling that the pastor was, you know, going to say that it was the sisters who
mm-hmm.
were leaving.
Now, the pastor didn't share this idea with you at all.
No, we had a survey when mm-hmm. I found that the school was, that the first grade had been closed. I asked for, it was at the time when the priority schools were being given.
Right.
And I asked the community, and they said if we could guarantee 25 children in each of the single grades from grades 1 to 8, and that would mean recapturing the first grade,
right.
that
we would remain there.
That they would set us up as a priority school.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because Waltham children
needed that, yes.
Inner city children, for sure.
They needed it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a result of that, we put out a survey through the parish. Mm-hmm. But the children in that first grade had already been established.
Of course. You could never
backtrack. The school system, and it was very difficult for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't receive our
quota.
Mm-hmm. So that's what brought about the
demise. Did you have lay teachers at the same time?
Yes, I had one lay teacher at that
time. And all sisters?
And all sisters.
That was remarkable.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
So you left this school?
So this was the time when I had negative feelings when they asked me to go to Jackson School.
Surely.
I just couldn't imagine myself in that setting. However, I'm happy to say that after 7 years there, I learned that these youngsters had just as great needs, and perhaps even more so, than the children who didn't have the riches that they had. And it was here also, in the early 70s, that my educational career developed wider horizons, when I was invited to become one of the founders of the Intercommunity Core Principal Organization of the Archdiocese. And Sister Simon and I were to have the privilege to develop the bylaws for this organization. And to this day, this intercommunity group continues to be a valuable support to all principals in the schools of the Archdiocese.
In the elementary schools.
In the elementary
schools. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So that's.
Rita, would you describe briefly the type of school that the Jackson School was, where it's located, and why it was named Jackson?
That's an interesting story. Jackson School is located in Newton, and a few years before I arrived there, Sister Josephina had headed up the education department at BC. And as part of her program there at BC, she had studied the Montessori method in Europe, come back and developed a plan that was part-time Montessori and part-time regular curriculum. And to use this, to experiment with this, she had a group of parents there at BC bring some of their children to school there at BC. And they, she conducted this program. And as a result of that, the parents were clamoring for a place for their children
to continue that education,
to continue that program.
Surely.
So at the time, again, God's providence, Walnut School for All Boys was petering out, and they took over the school, and the Montessori school was started there, and it caught on like wildfire. Now, when they were finished their school in Montessori, again the parents were looking for some place to continue this education, and the education clinic that had been situated right there next door to the Montessori was going under a great transition. So the Jackson School
was born.
Born there, down upstairs in the education clinic, and Sister Frances Marilyn became the first principal. The school was a continuous progress program where the children were taken in, and program was curriculum was provided where they could move along at their own speed.
So you would say it was more or less an ungraded school?
It was, yes, yeah, mm-hmm. That was that idea of continuous mm-hmm. progress. There were two of each grade based in home room, but from there they moved out into to work
at to their own program
to their own level mm-hmm. of learning.
Now, of course, these children came from rather comfortable,
very comfortably
situated
yes,
families.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Parents. When I arrived there, the tuition was only $500. And it was just unbelievable what these children were getting
for $500.
Mm-hmm. So gradually, Mr. Gallagher,
our financial director,
took care of that, and each year there was an increase so that they were paying, but they got every bit of back. We had 14 sisters when we finally had the DI came in when there were four grades and or four classes, and then we added the other two so that it went from 1 to 6. And we had 14 sisters working, all sister staff working with those children.
And very well-educated women.
Beautiful women, wonderful women, and well, well qualified for the job that they were given to do. And we had Sister Florence as our music specialist.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they had everything, you know, to work with.
And why was it called Jackson?
It was called Jackson because at the corner of our block that took in Montessori and this new school, and Aquinas and Maria Convent there in Newton, was the Jackson Historical Society. And the street was named Jackson Road. And when Sister Josephina developed this program, she intentionally didn't want, she wanted it to be an intercommunity. I don't mean
mm-hmm.
intercommunity.
Yes.
Yeah, an mm-hmm. ecumenical
educational program.
Mm-hmm. So that's the reason for giving it Jackson. But I might add here too that where the parents never were in any doubt that we were a Catholic school and that we had each morning a religious education program for our Catholic children, And simultaneously with that was a program in values for those other children.
Very good. And that was a real step forward and a daring step.
Yes.
On the part of Sister Josephina and your part.
And Sister Andrew is carrying on now very beautifully.
Yes.
Since I left.
Have you any idea why we stopped at grade 6 and didn't continue through to high school?
I know that, you know, that was a constant as far as I was concerned.
Constant complaint.
You know, asking for whole time that I was there. But I know the way I expressed the way I felt about it was that in order to continue a program such as this, we would need, you know,
much more room.
Much more room.
Right.
Many more programs.
Yes.
You know, and it just didn't seem feasible.
I see.
At that time.
Yeah, I can understand that because this was such a specialized program.
It was.
Yeah. Very good. So how long did you stay at Jackson as principal?
I was at Jackson for 7 years. And then, in between now, in the summers, I had spent much time as a nurse's aide up at Bethany.
You and have a varied career.
There was no doubt in my mind that one day I would return to the hospital in my second career. But God had other plans for me. The month of July 1977 found me as a volunteer to the sick and elderly at St. Joseph's Parish in Lynn, back to my old homestead. This was at a time when the community was open to sisters embracing various ministries. And since my assignment as principal at the Jackson was drawing to a close, I looked forward with great excitement and enthusiasm to pursuing my second career in a different ministry. My short but rewarding experience with the sick and elderly led me to go in that direction. When I became aware that there was a need for a full-time person to assist Sister Mary Kelleher in the elderly visitation program at St. Joseph's Lynn, I immediately began the process of discernment with my area director.
What was Sister Mary Kelleher's religious name?
Sister Anna William.
Oh.
She had taught in Winthrop when she came to St. Joseph's. And when the school closed at St. Joseph's in 1975, Sister Mary stayed on. And it was at that time that the one of the priests asked her if she would mind getting involved in this type of visitation to the sick in the parish. And she had.
And the time was ripe.
The time was ripe. So, when I realized that this opening was available, I immediately began the process of discernment with my area director. However, it was 2 years before I was able to apply to St. Joseph's, and to my great joy, I was accepted for the position. My primary work as a pastoral team member at St. Joseph's was with the older parishioners who are confined to their homes and nursing homes or hospitals. And since sickness and pain have always been a heavy burden for all people, and something that we all find very difficult to understand, here at St. Joseph's we try to help our people to deal with some of the pain by showing them how much we care. Sister Mary Kelleher and I, with the assistance of 30 dedicated Eucharistic ministers, lay Eucharistic ministers, work together to care for the spiritual needs and in so many cases the physical needs of the shut-ins with love, respect, and concern.
These shut-ins were both in private homes and nursing homes.
Nursing homes, and then we also visited the hospital.
Oh, yes. What a wonderful work.
Every month I bring communion to about 35 of these beautiful souls. There are 6 nursing homes in our parish, and I am able to take care of 2 of these nursing homes. And this involves bringing communion about every 3 weeks We have a prayer service, and then we have a lovely visit together. They assemble the people in a large room.
Do you find cooperation from the nursing homes?
Beautiful cooperation.
They're so happy to have
They like to have us every week, and we would love to be there every week, but there just aren't enough of us to be there.
Yeah.
Sister Mary has two of these nursing homes, and then there are two lay people who share the other two to cover for us.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. And then each week, Sister Mary and I visit the parishioners in the hospital and bring them the joy of the Eucharist also. It's important for our people to know that they are not isolated or forgotten, but that they are a very special part of our parish life, that we need them, their prayers and their support, just as much as they need us. And we receive so much more than we could ever give. In return for bringing his love and peace to them, they fill our hearts with genuine love and gratitude, which is the special gift of the sick and suffering members of St. Joseph's Parish. And in addition to this visitation, we have Christmas party, where we bring, in fact, we're right in the throes of preparing for that now, where we bring the members of these nursing homes to our parish center. It's the parishioners who go to get them. We have our three friendly undertakers who provide a fan for us.
Isn't that wonderful?
And we collect all these people that are able from these nursing homes.